Now we're ready to go. So I was mentioning that we have a little bit of a choppy schedule between now and the end of this month, but I sent to Rabbi Kraft exactly the weeks that I would be out between now and, like, so 1 week that I'll be out is next week, but most weeks we'll be meeting, just not as steadily and as consistently as we had last semester. Okay, so tonight's topic is the definition of Maisa Ritzicha and Maisa Hatzala in the light of the Halacha, meaning how do we define acts of murder versus acts of rescue from a Jewish law or halachic perspective. And this is a very important topic because it really comes up in a wide range of different areas. We don't get, you know, Shilohs and Bezdin on a regular basis. When is it mutter for me to murder somebody or kill somebody? But it does come up in terms of general public policy matters. I mean, just to foreshadow a little bit, where the discussion is going, one very relevant topic that's being hotly discussed nowadays is the programming of the self-driving or autonomous vehicles, the rechev autonomy. One question is, how do you program it in such a way that if there should be a malfunction with the car, that the fewest number of people would get killed? If, for example, the car is about to barrel into a crowd of individuals and a lot of people might be killed, that there would be an automatic mechanism that would cause the car to steer in a different direction. So what happens if there's one innocent person who happens to be standing in that other direction is going to get killed instead? Do you program the vehicle in such a way that the main thrust is just to minimize the number of deaths? That sounds very, very reasonable. But is that even at the cost of a single innocent life? That maybe the grand effect will be that fewer people will end up getting killed, but one person who would not have been killed if not for the way that you program the vehicle is going to get killed. This is the famous trolley problem that was articulated by the professor, an English professor, not that she taught English, she was from Great Britain, so she's an English professor, Philippa Foote. She was a philosophy professor, and she articulated what's famously known as the trolley problem. What's the trolley problem? It's in the notes over here.
This is different because the car's not really going to kill anybody. In that case, the train is on a track. It's going in a certain way.
Well, we'll figure it out exactly how it's different because you're programming for a particular situation. So what's the trolley problem of Philippa Foote? Let's look at the runaway tram problem. That's the trolley problem. It comes up midway through her essay. It says, to make the parallel as close as possible, it may rather be supposed you're talking about like a pilot of an airplane or a driver of a runaway tram, which he can only steer from one narrow track onto another. And we're talking about a situation where something went wrong with the brakes, for example. Five men are working on one track and one man on the other. Anyone on the track he enters is bound to be killed. Okay? One sentence. So he says that what would be the assumption of most people of what this trolley driver whose brakes have malfunctioned should do if five men are working on one track and one man on the other, and all that the trolley driver can do is either remain on the same track or steer from one narrow track to the other, in which case he will steer away from the five men who would be killed and only end up killing one man instead. So says Philippa Foote, we know what the answer is. So she sort of works with the assumption that your average straight-thinking individual, when presented with that question, would say, well, of course, the driver of the runaway tram, of the trolley, should steer this malfunctioning trolley from the tracks in which there are five men working, right? They're all singing, I'm working on the railroad, having a good time, not knowing like what's about to hit them, right? Should steer the trolley away from those five men and go in the direction of this one innocent man, because this way the fewest number of lives will be taken. And she just asks it almost like a rhetorical question that, yes, we know what the answer is in that case, but why do we view that as different from the case that she gives, a parallel case where this is the first case that she has. The judge and magistrate is faced with rioters demanding that a culprit be found for a certain crime and threatening otherwise to take their own bloody revenge on a particular section of the community. The real culprit being unknown, the judge sees himself as able to prevent the bloodshed only by framing some innocent person. If the judge frames an innocent person, so then the angry mobs are going to be assuaged, and they're not going to end up taking their torches and their weapons through the streets and killing all these innocent people. So the judge sees that he is able to prevent the bloodshed by framing an innocent person and having him executed. So it's asked Philippa Foot, the question is, she's already surmised that most people would say, well, in the case of the runaway tram, of course, that you should steer the train in the direction of the one person who will be killed rather than the five people. So she says, given that answer, and we haven't answered that question, right? We haven't said that we agree necessarily with Philippa Foot, but she's assuming that's what we would answer. And she's saying, well, given that you're going to answer that way, right? I mean, this is a sort of a manipulative exercise on the part of a professor, that she's presuming that her students are going to answer a certain way, but maybe the students are smarter than she is. And they'll say, we don't necessarily agree that we're going to answer that way. And she says, assuming you're going to answer that way, yes?
Hypothetically speaking, let's say that the five people on the train are ordinary people. The one guy on the other train is a genius.
You know what I mean?
If you would notice in advance, probably. Is the answer the same?
Well, from a Jewish law perspective, we're going to see the answer certainly would be the same, because we don't place the value of one life over the value of another life. So presumably the answer would be the same, right? Say, so that's the question, that's the svara, the rationale of my chazis, the dama didach sumach tvei, dima dilma dama didach gaba sumach tvei. Who says that your blood is redder than somebody else? Maybe the other person's blood is redder than yours. Who says that the blood of an individual who is very, very smart is considered of higher value in the eyes of God than the blood of an individual who's not so smart? So says Philippa Foot, the question is why we should say without hesitation that the driver should steer for the less occupied track, right? Without hesitation, I don't know, maybe one of us or more would have hesitated, but she says that without hesitation, that would be the assumption, while most of us would be appalled at the idea that the innocent man could be framed. Most of us would be appalled. It's very interesting because all of these different scenarios and questions that are posed by Philippa Foot are also posed by halakhic authorities. The dilemma of the trolley problem that was posed by Philippa Foot was posed years earlier, because we know that she came up with her problem in 1967. That's when she published it. And the Chazon Ish came up with the identical problem pretty much in a sefer that he published, which we know was formulated prior to 1967, because the Chazon Ish died in 1953. So therefore, the Chazon Ish preceded her, but Philippa Foot was apparently unaware. She had not gone through all the volumes. That particular volume of the Chazon Ish, she had not gotten around to yet. So she was unaware that the Chazon Ish had framed exactly the problem. Look, we say, Yesh Chachma Bagoyim Tamin. You're supposed to believe this. Chachma Bagoyim. So Philippa Foot certainly had the Chachma. Yesh Torah Bagoyim Al Tamin. She didn't have the Torah. She didn't have the Sefer Chazon Ish. So she can't be blamed for that per se. But the Chazon Ish framed the same problem. The Chazon Ish also was wrestling with this exact dilemma. Namely, we know that from the standpoint of halacha, you're not allowed to kill people, right? That's low tier stuff. We just read that, I think, a couple of weeks ago. Asara Sadibro. So it's important to know, because people are very good at reading the small print of what's in the Mishnah Berurah, the Shaar HaTzion, not as good necessarily at looking at what it actually says in the text, right? So in the text of the Torah, it says, Lo tirtzach, you're not allowed to murder. Very important principle, you're not allowed to murder. But does that mean that killing is never justified? Well, sort of a classic paradigm that we have along these lines is the case of the Rodev that the Gemara speaks about, right? That I have somebody who is pursuing, I have a would-be killer who's pursuing a would-be victim with the intention of killing the intended victim. So this would-be killer who's running after the intended victim, the Gemara in Sanhedrin derives from the various psukim that you're allowed to kill the Rodev. You're allowed to kill the Rodev. You're even supposed to kill the Rodev, the pursuer, the intended killer, in order to save the would-be victim. That's derived from a hekesh, an analogy between the case of a rotzeach, of a would-be intended murderer, and the case of somebody who is trying to rape a betrothed maiden, the Nara Hamurasa case. We have a hekesh in the pasuk, Ki kasher yakum ish ariyeh ritzacho nefesh, ken ha-davar hazeh. whatever is true in the case of Nara HaMurasa is true in the case of the Rotzeach. What's true in the case of Nara HaMurasa? It says, Ein Moshiach La. There was nobody out there who was able to save her, right? If she was being raped in the sud in the field, there was nobody who was able to save her. So the Gemara derives, Hayesh Moshiach La, Bechol Davar, Shiach La Hoshiach. If there is somebody who can save her, then that person has to save her in any way that he can save her. Meaning, even if it means killing the would-be assailant, killing the would-be rapist, that would be permissible. Since we have a hekesh, we have a juxtaposition between the case of Nara HaMurasa and Rotzeach, so the Gemara derives the same thing is true in the case of the Rotzeach. You are allowed, you're even supposed to, kill, if necessary, obviously if necessary, kill the intended murderer in order to rescue the would-be victim, okay? So in such a case, that is not considered an act of murder anymore. Even though you're killing somebody, that's considered to be a maisa hatzala, right? But there's a very thin line. What's the thin line? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Mem Tes tells us that this is only true if it's absolutely necessary to kill the would-be murderer in order to prevent the would-be murderer from committing the murder. But if you're able to disable the would-be murderer by being chovel be'echad me'ivarov, by simply maiming the would-be murderer in one of his limbs, by, for example, amputating one of his limbs or shooting off an arm or shooting off a leg, and that's going to disable and incapacitate the would-be murderer from committing the murder, then you're obligated to do so. Not only are you obligated to do so by taking the less lethal means of action in such a circumstance, but if you had the ability of simply maiming the would-be murderer, and instead you chose to actually kill the would-be murderer, so that's not only considered to be a naughty, not so nice thing to do, that is an act of murder. It's an act of murder. Somebody who kills the rodape when they could have simply maimed the rodape is chayev misa. Whether they actually get ritzicha from the bezdin, or whether it's chayev misa b'day shemayim, separate discussion between the rabbim and the raibid. Really, that's more of a technical discussion that maybe the person really could have argued that under the circumstances they didn't realize that it wasn't necessary to kill the Modape, that there was an easier way out. But if it's crystal clear that there was an easier way out, so then it's very clear that the person should even be put to death. That's what the Sugya says in Sanhedrin, because it says Avner was being pursued by Asael, right? And Abner killed Asael, then Yoav put, Yoav was the brother of Asael, put Abner to death. And the Gemara indicates he was done Dina de Sanhedrin, that he made that judgment based on what was the actual halachic requirement under the circumstances that Abner deserved the death penalty. Why did Abner deserve the death penalty? He was simply defending himself from Asael, who was trying to kill Abner. So says the Gemara, because it was quite clear that Abner very deliberately struck Asael between the fourth and fifth ribs of a dolphin, achamishis, you know, in a particular place where he would definitely die, where it would have been possible, and Avner knew it would have been possible, to simply maim and disable Asael in such a way that Asael would not have died. And since it was crystal clear in such a case that he took the extra measure that was not necessary of killing the assailant when he could have simply incapacitated him with non-lethal means, that he was chayev misa, and therefore it was appropriate for him to have been put to death. So we see that there is a very thin line between what is endorsed according to halakha as a killing, which is defined as a maise hatsala, as a maise which is rescuing an individual, and a killing which would be considered a maise ritzicha, an act of murder. And the question is, how do we differentiate between those thin lines? And says the Chazon Ish, we have exactly the same dilemma with respect to this trolley problem, or what the Chazon Ish refers to as the deflected arrow problem. Hard to fully understand the real life application or the real life conceptual circumstance of the Chazon Ish's theoretical case, The Chazon Ish is a theoretical case, which you see right here. It's in Sanhedrin Simon Chafei. He talks about V'yesh La'ayin. We have to figure out Be'echad Shirach Eitz Holet. There's somebody who sees an arrow which is flying in the air. La'ro Ganoshim Rabim. And this arrow is going to kill many people. I don't know exactly how that works. The arrow is flying in the air, and it's quite clear that it's going to kill many people. I can't quite visualize it, but something along those lines. If there was an arrow, you knew it was going to kill a lot of people. But Yaakov, I'm sorry? Well, I understand, but he doesn't use the term bullets. He uses the term arrow. Okay, so something that functions like an arrow. You could say the Chazon Ish meant something that functions like an arrow. It could be a trolley car that's functioning like an arrow, something like that. And the person, he's not quite as quick as the flash, so he's not able to interrupt the arrow mid-air and just, you know, pluck it out of thin air. The best that he can do is like close to the flash. He's like, you know, sort of a flash in training. He's fast enough that he can get to the arrow to deflect it, but he can't quite pluck it off the air. So all that he could do is deflect the arrow in such a way that instead of the arrow going into these five individuals and killing the five individuals, the arrow is going to veer off. But it's going to veer off in such a way that it is certain that it's going to kill one other person who was not otherwise in harm's way, right? He can be able to tilt the arrow at side, we should say tzad akir probably, and kill only the one person who is tzad akir in the other direction, right? And then if he does that, Beilu Shivat Tzad Zeh Yitzolo, the people on the other side are going to be rescued. Lum lo yaseh klum yagu arabim, doesn't do anything, so then the many people are going to get killed, and the other person will remain alive. Be'eshbe'a echad yishaya b'chayim, be'eshad lo dami, so the Chazon Ish says, so what is the halachic, what is the halachic source or the precedent that we have for dealing with this type of case? It's a very interesting case, a very interesting halacha, which you find in the Yerushalmi and Trumos. It's based on a Tosefta in Trumos, and it's not an Arab Babli. We don't find it in Arab Babli per se. It's in the Tosefta, it's in the Yerushalmi, and it is a very fascinating situation. It's the situation, if you turn back to the first page, where I have, and it's codified by the Rambam, it's a case where I have some gangsters. I have some marauders who are coming to town, and they say to the townsfolk, we want you to hand over an individual, and if you don't hand over that individual, we are going to kill everybody. Don't hand over that individual, we're going to kill everybody. Do you have the right to hand over that individual or not, right? Okay, so so it's unanimously agreed that if they don't identify an individual, they ask you to pick an individual. You can't pick a particular individual to hand over that individual and say, okay, we're randomly choosing somebody to hand over the enemy, so this will be our sacrificial lamb, and everybody else is going to get saved. That you certainly can't do. This might be relevant to, or this might be related to the case that we discussed in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, where we mentioned, just in passing, I'll mention it more explicitly now, the Gemara brings the following situation. That's source number one. The Gemara, it's in Sanhedrin, it's also in Yuma Daf Pei Beis, that there is a person who came in front of Rabbah and said, somebody had, the governor of the city, said to me, Mari Durai, you know, the governor of the region, I guess not a very law-abiding governor, but he said to me, go kill somebody, Katle Laponia, I want you to kill somebody, I don't like that person, below Katil Nalak, like a typical politician. I want you to kill somebody, and if you don't kill that person, I'll kill you. Okay, so that's what the governor says. So do you have the right to kill that individual to save your own skin? Normally, you're allowed to violate a beirus to save your own skin. That's the principle of b'chai b'hem v'lo shiyamus b'hem, that the Torah was given to us to live and not to die. But there are a few exceptions to the rule. One exception of which we say, Yereg Bal Yabor, that it's better for you to allow yourself to be killed than to violate the Aveira. One exception is the case of killing somebody. That's this case right here. Another exception is acts of adultery and incest, Or where, for example, the Nava Amurasa case, committing adultery with a betrothed maiden, that would also be a Yereg Baal Yavor case. And a third situation of Yereg Baal Yavor would be Avodah Zarah, right? Avodah Zarah we know because it says, right, that you have to love God with all your heart and with all your soul, even to give up your life rather than to betray God by worshiping an idol. How do we know the other two cases? So the Gemara says, well, we already quoted that juxtaposition between the case of Ritzik and the case of Nara Hamarasa. Ki kashir yakum mishariyeh v'sukho nefesh kein hadabar hazeh. The two cases are juxtaposed. So we don't have this explicitly in the case of Nara Hamarasa, where it says you have to give up, or one would have to give up their life, rather than commit an act of incest or adultery. We don't have that explicit, but because of the juxtaposition, if it's true in the case of Ritzicha, it'll be true in the case of Nara Murasa. How do we know that it's true in the case of Ritzicha? So the Gemara says it's a Svara. It's a Svara, this exact case. The person asked the Shaila. It's nice that he had time to ask the Shaila, right? The governor gave him time to ask the Shaila. Said, here, I'm giving you a choice. You can either kill Ploni or I will kill you. And you're not sure what to do. I understand you have to ask your posseg. Go to the CRC, ask the Shaila, and then come back and we'll take care of it. Either I'll kill you or you'll kill the person. No problem. You know, I'm very respectful of the halakhic process. So the person, he went to Rabbi, said, what should I do? And Rabbi said, Niktalech lo tiktob, that you should rather be killed, but don't kill somebody else. And this is the Svara. My cause is the Dhamma Didach Sumak Tfei. Dhamma Dhamma Dahaugava Sumak Tfei. Who says that your blood is redder, that you have the right to kill somebody else? Maybe that person's blood is redder, and therefore you have no right to kill that person. And then we say, okay, so now that we know this principle with respect to Ritzipa, it would also be true with respect to Gidui Arayos, with respect to Nara Marasa. Fine, good. So as a general rule, we don't just pluck people out and say, okay, we are going to decide that this is the person who's going to be killed in order to save everybody else. We can't really do that. But let's say that the enemy now turns to us, and the enemy says, you know what, I'll make it easy for you. I'm going to identify that individual that I want you to turn over. Okay, I'm going to identify that individual for you to turn over, and you just turn over this individual to me. So can you turn that individual over to the gangsters so this person will be killed in order for everybody else to be saved? You're not killing the person, but you're giving the person over to be killed. So says so there is a machlokis between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish in this particular scenario. Now, this particular scenario, we understand, is not your usual my chazis type of situation. Why is it not your usual my chazis type of situation? Because here we have an individual who has been designated, right? This individual who has been designated is only one person. He's only one person. Everybody else, collectively, they're many people. So certainly it would stand to reason that the collective entity of, say, the entire town, say there are 1,000 people in the town, 10,000 people in the town, their dam, their blood is certainly redder than the blood of only one individual, right? So therefore the svara should not be applicable in this particular case. So says Rabbi Yochanan, fine. They designate a particular individual, you give over that individual and save the rest of the town. No, you save the rest of the town. Reish Lakish says, nothing doing. No, no, says Reish Lakish, you can't do that. You can't give over the individual. There's a story in Nach about how when Sheva ben Bichri was hiding in a particular town, and he was a rebel against the David HaMelech, and therefore he was Chayav Misa, right? And Yoav was trying to go after him, that they gave over Yoav ben Asriya. They had him killed in order for the entire city not to be killed by Yoav. So it seems that that's a legitimate thing to do. So it says Reish Lakish, yes, if you're dealing with Sheva ben Bichri, you're dealing with somebody who was a Moed B'Malchus, you're dealing with somebody who was Chayav Misa anyway, and they're asking for the head of that individual, so you can give over the head of that individual. That person can be given over if they ask. If the enemy say, we want Sheva ben Bichri to be handed over, you can hand over Sheva ben Bichri. But if it's not Sheva ben Bichri,
What if they didn't ask him, but he's still obligated to...
No, they'd have to ask him, because otherwise we have a methodology in which a person goes through an entire trial, and there has to be a Besdin proceeding, there has to be procedures and protocols. We don't just volunteer Sheva Ben Bichwi. It sounds like they have to actually ask a Sheva Ben Bichwi. Otherwise, he's not ready to be killed just yet. But if they ask a Sheva Ben Bichwi, and he was Chayav Misa, so he say, okay, fine. So then you can hand the person over. But otherwise, you can't hand the person over. Now, generally speaking, if we have a machlokis between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, who do we paskin like? We paskin like Rabbi Yochanan, usually. But in this particular case, the Rambam paskins like Reish Lakish. It's a question, why he paskins like Reish Lakish? He paskins like Reish Lakish to say that you would not give over a designated individual even to save an entire town. And the way that most poskim, including the Kesef Mishnah, a.k.a. Beis Yosef, a.k.a. Shulchan Aruch, right, pretty important figure, including the Kesef Mishnah, the way that they understand the sugya is that this individual who has been designated by the enemy to be given over and whom they want to kill is going to get killed either way. We're not talking about that this person is sort of in hiding and if the rest of the townspeople will be killed, this person will be saved, and it's an either-or proposition. It's not even an either-or proposition. Now, not everybody learns the sugya that way, but that's the way the Kesef Mishnah learns the sugya. It's the way, by the way, the Chazon Ish learns the sugya as well. It's the pashtus of what the sugya is saying. There are those, like the Panim Meiros, like the Yalkut Shmuel, that's quoted by the Yad Avram on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, Yeridea, Simen Kuf Nun Zayin, who do learn the sugya differently. They learn that it is talking about an either-or proposition, and that this individual would not necessarily, they're in hiding, they would not necessarily get killed together with the rest of the city. But Pashtus is that they would get killed anyway together with the rest of the city. So the Kesef Mishnah is faced with a quandary. The Kesef Mishnah asks the question, why is it that when either way this person is going to get killed? In one circumstance, this person will get killed by themselves. The other circumstance, they're going to get killed with the entire city. We're going to rather have this person killed with the entire city than to hand over this individual and save the rest of the city. That doesn't seem to make logical sense. So the Kesef Mishnah and my chazis doesn't seem to be applicable to this type of scenario. So the Kesef Mishnah says that the answer is because of the Chomer Maisa Ritzicha. Because what you're really doing over here, this isn't a Maisa Hatzolah, where this individual is running after, like a road ape, he's running after the others, and he's about to kill them, the enemy's about to kill them. If I kill this individual, you know what that is? That's a Maisa Ritzicha. It might result, incidentally, in a Maisa Hatzolah, in saving the other people, but fundamentally, by handing over this individual who is being requested by the enemy so they can kill this individual, what I am doing is participating in a Maisa Ritzicha, says the Kesef Mishnah. Maisa Ritzicha is so chomer, even after we have derived that the reason why we don't forfeit one person's life or another person's life is based on the Svara Maichazis. He says this general principle that we don't kill people, okay, even if it means that others will be saved, is applicable even when the Svara of Maichazis is not applicable because of the Chomer Maisa Ritzicha. The Chemdas of Shlomo Lifshitz, quoted by the Achiezer in his Tshuvos, comes up with another explanation of why it is that we do not make everything dependent upon the Svara of Maichazis. And he says that we may have started out with the Svara of Maichazis, but what did we do at the end? In the end, we drew a juxtaposition between the case of Ritzicha and the case of Nara Hamurasa based on a Hekesh that was in the Pasuk, right? So he says, once we apply that Hekesh to Nara Hamurasa, saying that in such a case a person would have to give up their life, that's not dependent on the Svara of Maichazis. That's simply based on the Hekesh. Once I have a case of Nara Hamurasa, where I say Yerag Val Yavor, that is not dependent on the Svara of Maichazis, so then I go back to the original source of Rotzeach, from which Nara Hamurasa derived from, and say that then, once the Hekesh has, once this rule has been transferred to Nara Hamurasa, where the Svara is not applicable, so then I go back to the original source and say that the Halakha will be applicable, even to the case of Rotzeach, even when the Svara is not applicable. Very interesting, very interesting. A third possible explanation is along the lines of what the Gemara, what the Mishnah in Sanhedrin says. The Mishnah in Sanhedrin says, and this appears to be a garita, but the truth of the matter is it's a garita which is stated in connection with Beis Din procedure of what we of the process and procedure through which we adjudicate capital cases. And we say the Pikach Nivra Adam Yechidi, that every single person is created as an individual. The Lametcha Shikola Ma'abi Nefesh Achas Mi'Israel, to teach us that, and this is how we're Ma'ayim Ala Eidim. When people come to testify, we explain to them the enormity of the consequences of their testimony. Okay, that's the context of the Mishnah in Sanhedrin. So the Mishnah says each person is created in their own special likeness that does not resemble somebody else. Even though people sometimes seem to have doppelgangers and the like, but you know, everybody still has a slight different nuance difference from everybody else. So he says, why is that? So Mala, so the reason is, we'll have to teach you that if you destroy a single person, Mala, and besides that, we know Adam HaRishon was created as a singular individual, and so too everybody is created as a singular individual, just like Adam HaRishon. To teach you that if you kill one person, Mala Lav Akasav Kilu Ibed Ola Mole, that it's considered as if you have destroyed an entire universe. And so too, if you save a life, it's considered like you have saved the life of an entire universe. So you can say like this, that when I am comparing the murder of one individual versus the murder of many individuals, it doesn't really matter, because if we view every single Yisrael as an olam mole, every single person I might kill in the community as an olam mole, as being equivalent to the entire universe, you can't compare infinities to each other. You can't say that one infinity is greater than another infinity. One individual is an olam mole. It's just in the same way that 1,000 individuals are an olam mole. So therefore, it's not really that the equation has shifted. Even if I go back to the original equation of my chazis, I would still have to say that I have no right to hand over one individual in order to save everybody else.
Speaking of infinity as well, but they do believe there are different infinities. There are different levels of, you know, this area of math, there's different levels of infinity.
But at the same time, it's still an infinity, okay? It's still an infinity. Right, okay.
So we don't say five worlds is more than one world?
Exactly, exactly. Right. Okay. So again, I think those, I'm just giving you three different svaras. You can, I hear the point, but I think that nonetheless it is a legitimate explanation. So, given this reality, so the Chazon Ish says, so now, since we have this halacha, that you can't hand over, that if even handing over one person to save many people is not permitted when it is in the context of the Maisa Ritzicha, so says the Chazon Ish, we simply have to define, in the case of the trolley problem, in the case of the deflection of the arrow, is it fundamentally a Maisa Ritzicha? Is it equivalent to handing over one person to the enemy to save everybody else? In which case, I don't view it as a Maisa Hatzala. I view it as a Maisa Ritzicha in the same way that, for example, if I kill a Rodeif when I don't have to kill a Rodeif, it's a Maisa Ritzicha, even though if I would have had to kill the Rodeif, it would have been a Maisa Hatzala. It's this very thin line, so he says, I have to figure out where does that thin line, how does that thin line get defined in this particular context. So says the Chazon Ish, so we have to figure out what is this deflection of the arrow more similar to. Is it more similar to handing over somebody to the enemy, in which case it's a Maiser Ritzicha, or is it more similar to the idea of a case where it would essentially be a Maiser Hatzala? So take a look at the Chazon Ish again. We're back in source 6 on page 2. So he says, Ve'eshar delo dami lemosvim. He says, maybe it's not like the case where I'm handing over one person to be killed. Eshar delo dami lemosvim echad lahariga, ta'asim ha-mesira hi pu'ula ha-chzariya shel harigas nefesh, u'pu'ula ze'e leka ha-tzola sacherim v'teva shel ha-pu'ula. Because maybe, he says, in that particular case, handing over somebody, that particular act is simply a Maiser Ritzicha. Ela mikri garam akshav hatzala l'acherim. It's just that by doing that Maiser Ritzicha, mela, incidentally, others are going to be rescued. Aval hatayas acheitz, but the deflection of the arrow, mitzad zeh letzad acher, hi bikara pulas hatzala. This is, however, considered to be an action of hatzala if I'm deflecting the arrow, because deflection of the arrow, I am moving the arrow from the direction direction in which it is about to kill a number of people. And my main intention in deflecting the arrow is not that I'm deflecting it in the direction that it's going to kill somebody. No, my main intention is that I'm deflecting it away from the direction in which it's going to kill all of these people. So therefore, if I would stop right there, it has no connection to the fact that Mimela, incidentally, unfortunately, an innocent soul is going to get killed, but I am not directly engaged in an act where I'm taking an arrow in my hand and I'm throwing it at that individual in order to kill that individual so somebody else won't kill those five people. No, I see an arrow going towards five people and I'm deflecting it away from those five people. So if I just stop there, if I stop there at that moment in time in the Chazon Ish's discussion, I would come to the conclusion the Chazon Ish seems to be differentiating between the cases, seems to be in favor of what Philippa Foot described as sort of the common sense reaction to the trolley problem, which is, yes, that the driver should steer away from the tracks where the five people will be killed and steer the trolley instead in the direction where one person would be killed. And so, too, this flash-like individual who has the ability to deflect the arrow should deflect the arrow away from the five people in order to kill only one person. And in fact, there are a number of people who sort of stop reading the Chazon Ish right there. There's a Sefer called Sefer Pikuach Nefesh by Rav Aryeh Lawrence, and he seems to basically stop his reading of the Chazon Ish right there and say, yeah, we see the Chazon Ish basically holds that in the case of the trolley problem, better to steer in the direction where it's only going to kill the, where it's only going to kill the one person, because we view that fundamentally as a Maisa Hatzalah as opposed to as a Maisa Ritzicha. So too, Rav Asher Weiss has a piece on this in his Chidushim on Maseches Pesachim. His Chidushim on Maseches Pesachim. He also writes, if you look at the Chazon Ish, it's quite clear that this is the maskana, this is the conclusion of the Chazon Ish, that it's appropriate to act in this fashion. However, if you, so to speak, scroll down a little bit in the Chazon Ish, you see that is not the end of the discussion in the Chazon Ish. The end of the discussion in the Chazon Ish is that the Chazon Ish says, oh, or maybe it's the other way around. But you have to go about 10, 15 lines forward in the Chazon Ish until you get to that, or maybe it's the other way around. That's why there's an ellipsis here, the three dots. The three dots covers about 10 lines. So if you keep the Chazon Ish, you know, he writes for a long time. So if you keep on reading the Chazon Ish says, oh, maybe not. Before you go and kill anybody, I just had a thought that maybe this is not the case. It says, Miu, Hacha Gola. It says, maybe actually, this is even worse than the case of handing over somebody to the enemy. If you hand over somebody to the enemy, you're not actually killing somebody. You're just handing them to the enemy. Maybe they'll escape. Maybe they'll bribe the enemy. Maybe they'll negotiate something. You're not actually killing the person. You're just handing the person over. But this is worse, because by deflecting the arrow, you are actually pointing the arrow yourself directly, inflicting a mortal wound upon this one individual who is standing on the other side of the road, or the other side of it, the wrong side of the railroad tracks, as they say, right? Okay? Miuhacha gara, tahoreg biyadayim, below matzinu ledemosrin. All that we find is the handing over of alava biyadayim, efshata ein hargin, and he leaves it as a tzarach iyun. Comes along the Tzitz Eliezer. Tzitz Eliezer says, I read the entire Chazon Ish, okay? And therefore, my reading of the Chazon Ish is not that he concluded that you should steer the arrow in the other direction, but rather he said, Tzarach Iyun, I'm not really sure. So says the Chazon Ish, you have a driver whose brakes go bad. He speaks about this specific situation. The driver sees that he's about to barrel into five people who are right there in the middle of the road, and he only has the ability to steer away from those people, but he sees that if he steers away from those people, then inevitably this other one person who's standing on the other side, minding his own business, doing nothing wrong, just completely innocent, just outside of the face of danger, that this person will be killed. So says it, Tzitz Eliezer, Shevei Atase Adit, he found a Rabbeinu Yonah that said something similar in Maseches Avodah Zarah, like a very recently published edition of Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah. So he says, Shevei Atase Adit, and therefore the driver has to just reconcile himself with the fact that this is decreed min hashamayim on some level. It's not his role or job to play God. And if by steering away from the five people he's going to kill one person, therefore he should do nothing, even though five lives are going to be lost in the process.
But it's different with the train. The train is on a track. You know it's going to hit those people. Right. In the car, I don't know what can happen.
Based on what the speed is that the person is going, and based on where these people are positioned right now, they know exactly. This driver knows exactly where he's going. These people are 10 feet
he's
in front
so
of
smart.
Him.
Why is
the
he
driver
nervous?
Is going 70 miles per hour. Shouldn't have gone at that speed in all probability, but he did. Now, this the distinction between mesira and actual killing might actually be relevant in another context that I will mention quickly, but there are really a number of applications of this particular analysis. We know that there is an isser, and this is maybe a little bit of a chiddush, and you can question this. I'm not denying it, but nonetheless, I do think that it's a relevant parallel. There's an isser against killing other people. What about killing yourself? Are you allowed to kill yourself? You're not allowed to kill yourself. Why are you not allowed to kill yourself? Right? It's a pasuk in Parshas Noah that it's something that Hashem is going to demand of a person if they take their own blood. That also is prohibited. What type of act prohibition is that? Is that a ma'aser ritzicha? Minchas Chinuch says, it's not exactly ritzicha, it's some other prohibition. Nafkamina, whether you person would suffer the death penalty for it. But when he just killed himself, so you're not going to be able to administer the death penalty. Yeah, but if they were chayav misa and in the process they destroyed some kalim, a person decided to jump off a building and went right into a person's car and caused the damage in the person's car. So do we say, come lebe d'rabba minein, his estate is therefore going to be potter from having to pay for the damages to the car? That would be the nafkamina according to the minchas chinuch. But pretty much everybody argues with Memphis Chinuch, and they say, no, you know what the nature of this prohibition is? This is also an Isser Ritzicha. In fact, the Psikta says explicitly, Lo Tirtzach, another reading of Lo Tirtzach is Lo Titratzeach, that you're not allowed to kill yourself. That's also a Maiser Ritzicha. A person is normally not allowed to kill themselves. So you have this whole deliberation about what types of risks are you allowed to take with yourself in order to save another individual. And that there's a Hagos Maimonides that quotes a Yerushalmi that says that in the event that somebody is definitely going to die, unless you intervene, you are supposed to put yourself in sakana, even though you might die, but you're not definitely going to die. You should put yourself in a suffix sakana in order to save somebody from a vadai sakana. You're going to jump into the river, the person's drowning. You're not a really good swimmer. There's a good chance you're going to die too, but maybe you won't die. But if you don't jump in, this person's definitely going to die, so you're obligated to jump in. So says the Radbaz, that's really nice that the Yerushalmi says that. But if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, nobody brings that shita into the Shulchan Aruch. You know why that is? Because the Bavli disagrees with the Yerushalmi. Where does the Yerushalmi say that you're obligated? Where does the Bavli say you're not obligated? None of that is explicit. There's a Tzitz Eliezer that actually brings you the Mekoros. That the Yerushalmi has a case where there was a certain Amora who was in a very dangerous situation where to try to save that individual probably would have led to the death of the rescuers. This was Rabbi Imi. And Rabbi Yonasan said, we better prepare funeral shrouds for Rabbi Imi because there's nothing that we can do. And Reish Lakish says, what do you mean there's nothing to do? I'm going to go to save the day. And either I'll die or he'll die. Or either I'll get killed or, I'll save the person. So Reish Lakish was clearly prepared to risk his own life in order to save this individual. So they say, from the actions of Reish Lakish, we see that this is a proper thing to do. And since Eliezer says, who says, maybe we paskin like Rabbi Yonasan and not like Reish Lakish, I would say maybe it's different if you're Reish Lakish. The Gemara in Metziah Daf Pei Daled says Reish Lakish was quite a swashbuckling individual who was a former gangster, and he knew how to take care of himself. So maybe if you're Reish Lakish, you could be pretty confident that you're going to prevail. And Rabbi Yonasan did not quite have those same physical qualities that Reish Lakish had. That's the Yerushalmi. Bavli talks about how there were various gangsters that were trying to run away and get refuge, and they went to Rabbi Tafan, Rabbi Nida Daf Samachal. He didn't want to provide them with refuge, and Tosha says, because he was afraid that if he would provide them with refuge, that he would get killed himself. So says the Sicilia, so that's the Babli that says you don't have to put yourself in potential danger in order to save somebody from certain danger. So the Radba says the Babli disagrees with the Yerushalmi, even if you assume that the Yerushalmi says that there is such an obligation, and says that the Radba says, I would go even further. If a person is going to put themselves in a very in a dangerous situation, so such an individual is really doing something which is improper, that you're not supposed to. He says that such a person is a chassid shote, the speaker d'day adif mi badai dechabre, because that a person should value their life in such a way that they should not place themselves in uncertain danger, even if that means that somebody else who is in certain danger is going to perish. And now, what is the scar behind this? I would submit, and this is my fetish, it's the same calculation, that you have to make that evaluation when you're putting yourself in a dangerous situation. Is it a maisa hatzolo, where fundamentally you are not endangering yourself to the point where you're really killing yourself, and what you're primarily doing is saving somebody else? Or is it really a maisa ritzicha because of the degree in which you are placing yourself in certain danger? So you'll bring a kasha, you'll say, what about the case of there is a the haruge lud, Ulinus and Pupus. What's the case of Ulinus and Pupus? You know the case of Ulinus and Pupus, right? I don't have to tell you, you know it, fine, we'll move on. The Gemara in Tainus, the Adap Yudfes, says that these people, they were amazing heroes. The place that they were given in Gad Eden, nobody else was able to stand the Mechitzasan. Nobody else is given their high level in Gan Eden, of where they were assigned a special place of a stature. What did they do? There was a decree against the Jewish people that was issued, I guess, by some Roman government, that the daughter of the emperor was killed, and they assumed that it was somebody in the Jewish community who killed her. Said, and they said, hand over the person who killed her, much like the Philippa Foot, a theoretical situation of, you know, the gangsters who are going to kill people unless you frame an innocent individual. They said, if you hand over somebody, if you don't hand over somebody that you're going to call the murderer, we're going to kill the entirety of the Jewish people. Wherever the Jewish people resided in those times, it sounds like it was like the entirety of Klal Yisrael, very significant chunk of Klal Yisrael. Comes along these two brothers, Linus and Pappas, and they say, we're the killers, we did it. They give themselves over, they get killed. As a result, the rest of Klal Yisrael are saved, and they are championed as these great heroes. The question is, why are they championed? They gave up their own lives. Wasn't that a Maisa Ritzicha? Different answers are given. One answer is, they would have ended up being killed together with everybody else. We saw that doesn't necessarily wash, according to everybody, right? Another answer is, well, it's different if they're giving up their lives for the entirety of the Jewish people. That's a different madrega. That's a different madrega, entirety of Jewish people. That's like Esther giving herself up for Klal Yisrael. That's, you know, that's something really that we would potentially countenance, right? That's a big infinity. And then, right, exactly. Also, you can ask a little bit on that, but according to your equation, maybe there are different infinities, right? But a third explanation is they didn't kill themselves, they just gave themselves over, right? They just gave themselves over. So the Chazon Ish is saying maybe that's even on a lesser level. You can't do that to somebody else, but you can do that to yourself in order to save the Rabbim. But so too, there's a distinction between giving somebody over and actually pointing the arrow in the direction in which somebody is going to die. So now, let's bring this around to the autonomous cars, okay? To the autonomous cars. Yes, question.
Two questions. The ones with on the train tracks, you're on the train, you know that the thing could come down this way. You are standing in the middle of it, and the track, the train can't go anywhere else. There would be a little psi on
accepting
the people.
Some responsibility.
On the people? Not necessarily. No, because the people have the right to assume that the train is operating according to its normal protocols, and that the brakes are working and all of these things, and they're working, and they're working, they're doing their job, so very difficult to say that it's a Pshia. Also, who says that we're not talking about little kids that suddenly run on the train tracks, and it's a place where there's a possibility kids might run on the train tracks, and you certainly can't say that the kids are guilty of Pshia. The same type of equation was raised with respect to the question, was it permissible to shoot down the plane that was about to go into the World Trade Center? And they spoke about this. Rabbi Blythe has an article. Poskim spoke about this issue. Is that considered to be a Maisa Hatzala, if they would have shot down the plane? And also there, the people would have died anyway as well. Or do you say that's a Maisa Ritzicha? It's not equivalent to killing the Rodeif, because the innocent passengers sitting on the plane who weren't commandeering the plane into the World Trade Center buildings, but they weren't Rodeif. You can't call them Rodeif. You could say they would die anyway, but as we saw from the case of the Yerushalmi and Trumos, that the fact that a person's going to die anyway is not a justification for taking their life or even for handing them over to the enemy, certainly not shooting the person down actively. So therefore, that creates this question mark. So this actual case was discussed in the Sefer Mishnas Pikuach Nefesh by Rav Aryeh Lawrence, and he said here too, we sort of went back and forth. Is this considered to be a Maisa Hatzala, or is it considered to be a Maisa Hariga? He says, Maisa de Matos is three lines in the bottom of page 2. Harezu Pulas Harigo Mitzar. Maybe that should be considered to be a Maisa Hariga. Achen Yesh Lomar, the Hatzala. Or maybe you could say, no, it's a Hatzala, because what you're really doing is just blowing up the plane, and it's only incidental that the people inside are going to die. And the blowing up the plane maybe is a Maisa Hatzala. You're not targeting the person, you're targeting the plane. Just the people happen to be inside. Said, I asked the Rav Chaim Kanievsky this question, would it have been appropriate to shoot down the plane or not? And he answered, he's famous for giving terse, succinct answers. Okay, he said, Mr. Pachman Bazet, good question. That's a real good question. We're really not sure how it plays out. Again, the same dilemma between how you define the Maisa Ritzika and the Maisa Hatzala. But one svara, interestingly, that this Rav Aryeh Lawrence has in his Sefer, so he comes up with the following svara. He says, maybe we have an anansadi, and this is going to be relevant to the autonomous car case. He says, maybe we have an anansadi, meaning that we can say for sure that if you would have gone over to the passengers who are on the plane, and you would have asked the passengers on the plane, what would you prefer us to do? You're going to die either way. Would you prefer that the planes be shot down, even though you would invariably die in the process, in order to save all the people in the building? So they probably would have said yes. They probably would have said yes under those circumstances. So he says, maybe that's a smart to shoot down the plane. But then he said, no, but maybe not. Because while that's true with respect to all the adults who are on the plane, you can't say that with respect to children on the plane. The children are not in a position to make an informed decision about their fate. And therefore, you have no right to take the lives of the children who happen to be on the plane. A very interesting, you know, equation. Right, and also, what rights do the people have? You say, anansadi, that would only assume that a person has the ability to take their own life. But as we said, that's not at all pashut that a person can take their own life in order to save others. The case of Pappas, of Lulinus and Pappas, might have been an exception to the rule. Both the Tzitz Eliezer and Rav Kook in the Mishpah Kohen say that as a general rule, we would probably say you're not allowed to just take your own life in order to save others. It's not pashut that it's something that we would, as a general rule, permit. Yes?
But there was another plane when they did take that action. They remember they commandeered the plane, preventing it from going into the Pentagon?
Rabbi Blythe talks about that. Rabbi Blythe says that that's perfectly commendable, because it's perfectly possible, given the expertise of those who took over that plane, okay, not the one that going to the Pentagon, it was one, I don't know if it was intended for the Pentagon, but wherever it was intended, there was a plane that went down. It went down, we're in Pennsylvania somewhere. So he said there, it was perfectly reasonable that there was a possibility that had they been fully successful, successful, they would have been able to steer the plane towards safety. So he said that, you know, is unquestionably a heroic and appropriate act. So let's talk about the self-driving vehicles. So there are two questions with respect to self-driving vehicles. One is, do you have a right, is it a good idea to promote self-driving vehicles? The second question is, what do you do if you're programming the self-driving vehicles for the trolley problem type of situation? Let me deal with the first question. What is the first question? Why are you looking at me for the first question? So, in general, when a person drives, they have a certain amount of control over how they are navigating the road. Because they're at the steering wheel, they have the ability to figure out when to put on the brakes, when to steer, how fast to go, and so forth. So there is a greater degree of control than when you are subject to a self-driving vehicle. It's true, you're subject to all the vagaries of the dangerous drivers who are out there, but at the same time, you are, especially if you're a good driver, so you might say that there's a certain safety quotient that exists. If you're going to give way to autonomous vehicles and there's some sort of a malfunction in the vehicle, it could be that on some level, you're placing yourself in a danger that doesn't exist right now. Do we have a right to impose self-driving vehicles upon everybody? For some people who are very bad drivers, so clearly they'll be better off with the self-driving vehicles. But maybe for other individuals who are very good drivers, they'll be worse off with respect to the self-driving vehicles. So I would say there that clearly the self-driving vehicles are not killing anybody. They're not creating a situation in which, because there might be a malfunction, that is a direct decision that you're going to steer an arrow towards somebody or steer a train towards somebody and kill them. And the reality is that nobody can really argue that they are necessarily better off. It's like when you fly in a plane. You don't have control over the plane. You're not steering the plane. Most of us don't even know how to fly a plane. Nonetheless, despite the fact that we're sort of helpless, that we're sitting there and we don't have the ability to drive the way that we do with our cars, the reality is the planes are a lot safer than cars, okay? And most of them are essentially programmed to be more or less self-driving, and that they're a lot safer. And secondly, even if you are a very good driver, you cannot fully protect yourself from all of the reckless drivers who are out there, who are engaged in drowsy driving, drunk driving, distracted driving, who are looking at their phones while they're driving. And how many of us are 100% perfect in that regard? Either, by the way. Although we should be, because it's a very dangerous thing in cars, and there are more people killed in car accidents than in wars. And it's something that we should take a lot more seriously. Apparently, the Stipe Lagon once said, had the European Gedolim been asked whether it's mutter to have cars, they probably would have said no, or very likely would have said no, because it's one of the most murderous things that was introduced to mankind. But in all likelihood, if everybody's going to be safe and there'll be much fewer accidents because of self-driving cars, I think that's something that really should be promoted, and that's something we have an obligation, just like the person who is saving the individual who would otherwise be killed by, you know, going after the road ape, has an obligation to see to it that they introduce the measures that will protect everybody as much as possible and not bring death when it's unnecessary. So we have an obligation to introduce measures on the road that will protect and save the lives of as many people as possible. That, I think, is pashut. But the more complicated question is, okay, so now you have the individuals who are programming the self-driving cars. Now, how do you program, if you could program, I'm not sure that you really could program the car for this specific situation. It might be a purely theoretical discussion, but it's a discussion that has already been written about. There's an article by Rabbi Yosef Sprung, who's the head of the Beis Medrash of Rav Asher Weiss, published in Hamayan Journal. Others are talking about this as well. If you could program the self-driving car in this type of situation, what should you do? Do you say that really what you're doing is you're programming the car to just see to it that it saves as many lives as possible and takes as few lives as possible? Do you say, you program the car to say, listen, you know, car, Alexa, whatever you're going to call the car, if you're about to barrel into 5 people and by steering away you'll only kill 1 person, so then that's what you should do. Maybe it's better because it's not b'shas maise. You're not to actually, when you're programming, you're not deflecting the arrow towards an actual person. You're not driving the trolley car towards an actual person. You're not shooting a missile towards an actual plane that is in motion. You're just programming for this eventual situation.
There's a third answer. Tell the car to stop.
No, but let's say you can't.
Let's say you can't.
But based on the speed that it's going. Yeah. So Rav Yosef Sprung wrote, therefore, since there's no actual case in front of us, this is much better and it is appropriate to program the car in that particular fashion. Rabbi J. David Bleich, has, in a recent lecture that I heard from him, came to the identical conclusion. I got up and spoke about this issue recently, and I said, I'm not so sure. Mechilas quote, everybody who has written and spoken about this subject, maybe on some level, this is even worse. You can argue that if a person happens to be driving a car and they're about to barrel into five people, who was it that you say that maybe they're somewhat responsible for creating that situation? They were driving too quickly, they weren't really watching the road carefully enough, and therefore they bear a certain direct responsibility towards those five individuals, and therefore they have an obligation to bear away from those five individuals, even if it means they might kill one person. Maybe, I'm not sure. Again, the Tzitz Eliezer said that no matter what, they shouldn't, you know, steer away from those five people. But I could see more of an argument. But to say the chatzchila, that I'm going to set up a system in which I'm programming this car to actually change direction, go after an individual who is standing at the side of the road, was otherwise not in harm's way, and say, go towards that person, and go and collide into that person and kill that person, that might actually be more problematic.
There's no inevitability of my going straight. Cars turn all the time.
Again,
those five people are not the same danger as
the person in the
track.
No, but here I'm talking about, I'm programming the car. The car knows, okay? However the car knows these things. It's a smart car. The car knows that it's either going into these five people and will inevitably kill the five people, or it will veer away from the five people and knows that one person is definitely going to get hit and killed. As I said, it might be a theoretical question, but assuming that these are the facts, so it wasn't as clear to me that I would define this as a Maisa Hatzala, even though the situation has not yet been created, that it wasn't clear to me that we should ever program in such a way that we're going to actually tell the car to go into a person who is on the side of the road, otherwise not in danger. It's similar to what the Tosfos writes about in Psachim and Daf Kaf Hei Amud Beis, the Maichazis sort of functions in a reverse way as well, that if a person was told, we're going to kill you or else unless we passively throw you upon somebody else and kill the person by passively throwing you, so the individual is not going to engage in an active maisa of murder, the person is just going to be thrown upon another individual. So then Tosfos says the Maichazis Svara works in a reverse direction. That the Maichazis Svara says that Maichazis, that this other person's blood is redder than mine, that I have to allow myself to be killed rather than to be thrown onto that individual. And Tosfos says then there is no affirmative obligation for the person to give up their life. So too, there's no affirmative obligation for this one individual who's standing on the side of the road and otherwise was not in harm's way to cause himself to be in harm's way in order to save the other five individuals. So you could make the following argument. I think I saw Rabbi Sprung made this argument as well. He said, maybe there's an unansadi over here. That if you would ask your average person, how would you want the system, without knowing whether you're going to be in the group of five or in the group of one, how would you want the system to work? Most people would say, we want the system to work in such a way that the fewest number of people get killed, even if they happen to be, you know, in the group of the fewest people. So number one, I wasn't sure that's true. I wasn't sure it's true. And number two, again, you get back to the question of what about if the person isn't necessarily at a point to make that decision? They're just a child that happens to be standing on the side of the road. Do we get to make that decision to go into the child and kill the child in order to cause the fewest number of deaths? So it's not pushed to me. I'm not saying that there's a definitive conclusion over here. I'm just saying that it's much more complicated. So this is just a brief overview of the presentation of the complication of defining that very fine line between how we're magdir, of how we categorize a maisa hatzalan halacha and maisa ritzicha. These are really, you know, dvarim which are in the gedder, in the classification of dine nefashos. So we have to be extremely careful and extremely meticulous, obviously consult with the Gedolei Yisrael whenever it comes to making any of these determinations.
Would it be better to hit a wall or pole?